Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, in 1972, an American film crew travelled to Northern Ireland where they filmed a documentary on the IRA. Now, they had unprecedented access, including being allowed to film them as they planned attacks and trained recruits. This is actually an example of that. This is Des Long, who's a senior IRA member, making some of the members familiar with a weapon.
Now, we'll be going into the details of this rifle and the working of this rifle later, but before we do that, I want to pass around these other weapons so you can get the feel of them. This one we're passing around now is the US carbine. This weapon we're handing around now is the Thompson submachine gun. I want you to get the feel of that weapon as well. This is an ideal weapon for assault groups in close-up fighting, and it's a good weapon in street fighting.
Now, that footage was never broadcast, or the rest of the documentary. The film crew, it's not sure who they were exactly, or that indeed that they might not have been what they seem. Tonight, the BBC broadcast a documentary on all this called The Secret Army, which is the name of tonight's show, plus also it was the name of the original planned documentary. Dara McIntyre is the reporter. Good afternoon, Dara. Yeah, okay, Dara's not there. We've had a bit of a whoopsie on the phone line there, so we're going to try and re-establish contact with Dara, and hopefully we'll talk to him in the next few seconds. Okay, so what we'll do when we're, when we need to get back onto Dara, we'll play another clip. Now, this is one of the people who took part in the documentary kind of regretting they ever did it.
When they were making it, Boyle Bell told me that they were at, and I said, I want a mask. Oh, he says, I'll tell you, he says, you'll only be shown from the chest down. And that was a verbal promise for him, and it meant nothing. The whole thing was just, should never have been made. I'm sorry to this day I ever took part in it.
Right, Dara, we've re-established contact with Dara McIntyre. Dara, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, how are you?
Now, how much is known about how the documentary was set up in the first place, like as in who made contact with the IRA? Was it through this chap, John Boyer Bell?
Yes, it was. Jay Boyer Bell was very well acquainted with the Republican leadership. He had spent several years in Ireland in the 1960s researching a book on the history of the IRA. And it's fair to say that the IRA leadership knew him and trusted him.
And trusted him to the extent of giving him this kind of access.
Yes, but remember the times that were in it. That's crucial to understand. I mean, I think the IRA agreed to this because they wanted a propaganda boost in America. And I think if we go back to the period of filming, which is from March until June, July, you remember that this is after Bloody Sunday when 13 civilians were shot dead by the parachute regiment, that 14, 15 would die later. It's at a time when the IRA leadership was coming down with recruits and when the British government had closed down the local Stormont administration. It's at a time when the IRA may have thought they were on course for victory. So the organization was on a high in many ways, and I think they wanted this film to document that. And they were prepared to take the risks because I think no one imagined that the war, as they saw it, the conflict, the troubles, would go on for so many years, for so many decades. Mm. I think at that stage, the Republican leadership, they had already declared that 1972 would be their year of victory. And remember, as I said, things seemed to be swimming in their favor. I think they thought the conflict would be over pretty soon, and the risks they were taking would be were calculated, and that anyone who might be swept up or interned or whatever because of their participation in the film, they wouldn't necessarily be spending a lifetime in jail.
Yeah. So and did they have an understanding of when the documentary was completed, where it was going to be broadcast or anything of that nature?
They did expect it to be broadcast in America. I mean, the plan from the filmmaker's perspective was to, as we understand it, was to sell it to an American broadcaster. The big name involved at the start was CBS, who had indicated they would be interested in purchasing but didn't actually commit. Certain scenes from the original documentary were, in fact, broadcast by Walter Cronkite, CBS News, And they in fact, they're pretty totemic scenes, because you have Martin McGuinness, who, of course, we all know will go on to head a new Northern Ireland government and meet and greet the Queen. We have him driving around the bogside with guns, and then overseeing a car bomb, and also a bomb making class. So two of those two clips were actually broadcast on CBS News at the end of June 1972. And I think at that stage, the IRA and indeed the filmmakers thought they were well set for a potential propaganda boost in the States. But then things went wrong for them, because you know the phrase talks about talks. Well, it was throughout that spring there were talks about talks with the IRA. Harold Wilson, leader of the opposition, met with the IRA leadership in March in Dublin, and he passed on everything he had gleaned from that straight back to Edward Heath, the Prime Minister. There were then further discussions were being held behind the scenes involving various different politicians, culminating in July, at the start of July, when an IRA delegation was flown to London and took part in talks. And the talks, of course, didn't go anywhere. Talks were described as pretty useless by pretty much everyone who was there. But the point is, that's where the IRA were. They were actually being flown to London to have talks with the British government. Just think about that. You can imagine where their heads were at. They did not expect an imminent victory instantly, but they might have thought, or might have been excused for thinking, that they were in a position where they could start to try to strike a decent bargain with the British state. Then what happens? The IRA set off more than 20 bombs in Belfast on Bloody Friday at the end of June. And then just about a week later, they set off some more bombs in the tiny village of Clawdy. All told, 18 people, vast majority of them civilians, were killed, and many dozens were injured. And I think that changed the prism through which American television executives may have been looking at. I might have anticipated that their audience would be looking at this Irish revolutionary movement, no longer through the prism of the people who inherited this traditional Irish mantle of rebellion and had suffered brutally at the hands of the guns of British paratroopers on Bloody Sunday. Now we're looking at wanton, destructive killing and bombing.
So, do you were you able to establish that for sure, that they hawked around broadcasters and broadcasters says, no, this is all distasteful now, the tone around this has completely changed?
We do establish that, yes.
Yeah, okay, right. So it was refused by broadcasters rather than...
You see, that's not quite clear because and this was interesting, because Boyer Bell himself intimated, no one's going to watch this documentary now because you're doing this wonderful interview with me. But Boyer Bell himself told a longtime confidant of his, a friend of his, that the long arm of British government had interfered, because there was more to the sale of this film than American TV stations. There was also an effort to sell it abroad, and that failed too. The executive producer of the film, Leon Gildon, told me that he understood that all British Commonwealth countries, which are essentially being all English-speaking countries across the globe, apart from ourselves, were forbidden to show it. So there is certain sense to that. I actually did speak to a former top Irish diplomat of that era, and he told me that he didn't know of the film, which I did find extraordinary. And I said this to him because, look, it was on the Irish Times. The film was reviewed in the Irish Times, and the headline was "The Not So Secret Army," and it was on CBS Walter Cronkite's huge evening news show across America, the most popular news show in America. But he said he'd never heard of it. But if he had, he would have expected that he would have been able, using his diplomatic sources, to persuade TV companies in America not to broadcast it.
So where did the footage go to then? Where has it been all this time?
Well, essentially, the film was shown to a small number of audiences, private viewings, essentially, in America. It did actually get shown at an Italian film festival in the 1970s. But essentially, it disappeared, and we found it in the back room of a New York apartment. It's still in its cans. Most of the film was in very good nick. The main broadcast reel wasn't. It was technically looked great, but actually there was a big wash over the film, so we couldn't use it. But we did have there was sufficient other material for us to put everything together in its original format. So it was sitting in a New York apartment for the guts of 50 years. And of course, it wasn't in an air-conditioned environment. It was in a place which the temperature went up, the temperature went down. So it wasn't perfect, as I say, but good enough for us. And like when you see the color is so crystal clear.
Yes, my word. No, because I read that there was some question marks about the film crew didn't seem to be an experienced documentary film crew, and that
we go into that. We do go into that tonight. We go into that in the documentary.
Yeah,
it's already shown in the BBC iPlayer, which people can see tonight on BBC Two at 9 o'clock. We do go into that, and that's in a sense. This program. Here's the thing. At every turn in our investigation, we were finding surprises. We were continually astonished because we never knew quite where it was going to go next.
Mm.
Now, as we explain in the film, there is, I guess, compelling evidence that certainly the British intelligence organizations and very possibly their American and Israeli counterparts knew about this film as it was being made and were monitoring it as it was being made. We don't know what they did with it. We don't have any. We've spoken to IRA people who took part in the film, and they say to us, well, no one ever came and knocked our door and said, by the way, we've seen that lovely movie. But I did speak to an ex-intelligence operative who was working in Northern Ireland at the time. And he said, look, you've got to think about intelligence agencies like big hoovers. They suck everything up, and then they put them into a drawer. And that drawer will sometimes remain shut forever, and sometimes someone will come along and open that drawer and know exactly what to do with it.
Yeah. That, as Dara says, The Secret Army will be broadcast on BBC One tonight at 9 p.m. Dara McIntyre, thank you very much for talking with us today. You are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.